each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. It's Wednesday. It's Father Coy's. And my faithful assistant, Tony. God bless you.
Hi, Father. How are you?
Tony, we braved the trip to this beautiful studio. We're safe and sound.
Yes, this is where we're safe.
In a very, very sterile environment, as it were.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, fortunate, I guess.
Yeah, it is. We continue our lockdown, my friends. And and I'm torn here a little bit, as I often am, and that may be obvious by the way I jump around from topic
to
topic.
That's good. That means it's going to be a good show.
It's brain wrinkling time, no doubt about it. I did flock note out, for those who get my little flock notes, that we got to understand how philosophy is the great healer of the mind.
No, that was good.
I like that. Philosophy is the great healer of the... And, okay, you might say, well, mind doesn't need no healing. Thank you very much.
All minds need...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Hey, you got Nick there. He wrinkled his brain.
Exactly. Well, this is why I like this theme, because it flows from wrinkling your brain. Because, Tony, you could say as a innocent bystander... Mm-hmm. When you tune into the winds of change and Father Coy's wrinkles your brain, is that a good thing or a bad
it's
thing?
It's a very good thing. It all depends, though, if you're working heavy machinery or you're driving.
Yeah.
There may be a time where you want to just pull over to the side and stop what you're doing.
Exactly. It can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Healing can be dangerous. But as I think about that, yes, I mean it to be a good thing. Because
it's another way of thinking, in a sense.
Yeah, and the reason I came up with that little moniker there, philosophy as the brain healer. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to find a little audio clip on that, but maybe Nick can find philosophy as the great brain healer.
Now you start with a good premise.
Yeah, well, we got to start with a movie. See, we get most of our clips from movies,
right?
So, or TV shows, right. Or cartoons. Nick finds all the ones that are from a good cartoon.
Yeah,
love it.
Awesome.
But anyways, we will get to some Thomas Aquinas, because he is a different way of thinking than our modern mind in a lot of ways, and a lot of his thoughts, concepts, and teachings can heal our mind. Even as we know, our bodies are not indestructible. Our bodies are not immortal. We're made patently aware of that in this pandemic. We're acutely aware of our mortality, and that in itself can be a good thing.
Well, you know, they say some people they build their bodies.
Yeah,
you know, they get their health up. They get strength, but then people forget about your mind, and your mind is a muscle in a sense, too, that you need to keep.
Yeah. And it's evidence of an immaterial thing. And actually, when we use the word thing, we always think of material thing. Mm-hmm. But it begs the question, are there things that are not material? And this leads to Aquinas. Are there beings that are not material? Can something be in a way different than material being? Oh, well.
He is the one.
I was going to get to the Matrix.
You know what? That summed up what you just did to my mind a few seconds ago. That just summed it all up.
Well, Nick, are you saying I'm the one? I'm
he's the one.
You have to tune in, my friend. You have to tune in, my friend, because you will be brought to the truth. It's all I can promise you. You take the blue pill, and you wait a minute. Is it the?
I don't know if it's the blue.
I always get the
You're
blue.
You're making
and the
me
red.
Want to see this movie again.
I get the blue and the red mixed up. It's
you
red.
Take
pill.
The red pill.
Red pill is the truth.
Right.
It's all I'm promising you is the truth. Or you can take the blue pill and go back to La La Land and believe what is shoved down your. Take the blue pill. The story ends. The red is the truth.
That's
right, Nick. Nick's got
it. Man, I'm going back to see that movie again.
You got
to
watch
The Matrix.
But I'm going to come around to it because you could say philosophy is the great healer of the mind. And you can compare that to what Morpheus says to Neo. Remember when Morpheus is trying to train Neo to realize the truth of being in the Matrix, realizing that his world, the world that he's in the pod, the world that is the fake world pulled over his eyes, is the Matrix. And so he's trying to get him to realize the reality of the computer program and that you can sometimes bend, once you know that it's a computer program, you can bend these rules in the computer program. That's when he's trying to train him to jump over the buildings. Remember that scene? And Morpheus says, free your mind. Free your mind. And that is a popular sentiment today. A lot of young people like to think that they have to free their mind. And a lot of people who go to college are told that.
Wow.
That's,
you just wrinkled my brain.
No,
but that's where most people, I shouldn't say most people, I think it's where a lot of people get messed up.
Yeah. Tony, I think we're on the way for a 5 or 6 brain wrinkling hour here for Nick.
This is good.
If he keeps listening to our conversation.
He always listens.
Always there. No, sometimes I see he goes to the bathroom.
Oh, well,
he's got to rush back.
You got to take care of business, you
that's
know?
That's right. Okay. So we got Morpheus saying, free your mind. And there is a sense where I like that phrase.
Yeah.
But there's a sense that it can be bad. It's morally neutral. But many, you get a college professor to be teaching the young skulls full of mush as they grow up. And the college professor says, you know, you learned all this stuff when you were a kid. And especially if they're talking to Christian kids or Catholic kids that have appreciated and had a significant and decent catechetical upbringing. When that is said to a young mind, free your mind, they can easily take that to mean, free your mind from that catechism lessons you learned.
Right.
Those were the fake news. That was the lies. Now we're going to tell you the truth. If you take the red pill, you'll know the truth. And so the concept of free your mind is radically morally neutral, depending on what your mind has been fed. If you had some good truth, you had some good wisdom, and you're going to free your mind from that.
Not good.
You are going to go into different lies, or you're going
it
to
begins.
Have... Yeah, a lot of people's confusion begins when they encounter that. But on the other hand, let's say you grow up with a lot of lies. And then you begin to wonder. And then you go to college and then someone says, free your mind. You say, okay. Let's say your parents were, for the sake of argument, radical socialist communists. Or your parents were super liberal flower child hippies. And they didn't teach you much about reality. But they did remind you that love is what it's all about. You know, sounded good at the time.
Sounds like a Beatles song at this
point. Indeed. And so, okay. But then you're asked to free your mind.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Free your mind, Nick. Free your mind.
And so that kind of person is freeing their mind from something else.
Right.
So the movie Matrix is popular in a great deal because it's morally neutral. And in order to really go viral, in order to really be popular, you have to play to the audience, the mass audience.
Right.
And so you...
it's hard when you have to pick a side.
Right. And so a lot of things that are popular are morally neutral, mm-hmm. Leaving it up to you to decide, right? And so it is. So that the philosophy as a healer of the mind is somewhat parallel to Morpheus's free your mind. But when you say, I want philosophy to heal my mind, that's just the first step. And then you've got to analyze. You need to probe. You need to question. You need to define. You need to distinguish. You need to understand a teleology, a purpose, and all these things have been rejected. I was reading about the life of Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Now, some of your listeners may know that name, but you don't know too much about him. But he was a philosopher from France in the time of the around the French Revolution. I think he's right before the French Revolution, but his theory influenced the French Revolution a lot. That knocking off of the heads of kings and bishops and priests and noblemen of sorts. You know the basic story of the French Revolution, and one of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's great contributions to thinking is we must throw out tradition. Mm. We must throw out what was given to us. And of course, that sounds a little bit like free your mind, right?
Yeah.
I was surprised to learn that Jean-Jacques Rousseau had five children. Every one of them he abandoned. He told his wife to go take the baby, put him in an orphanage. And he didn't visit him. He didn't take care of him. He didn't...
Sounds like a stand-up guy.
Yeah, because the orphanage was run by the state. And the state will do much better in raising children than...
The mother.
Simple me and mom, dad and mom. And then he starts to write books on how to raise children.
Nice.
Sad.
Free your mind.
But see how that do away with tradition sounds in one way like free your mind. Mm-hmm. And it can be dangerous. So we got to be discriminating. Ooh, there's a word you're not supposed to be. But we have to be discriminating between what was good about what you were taught and what was bad about what you were taught. Okay, how do you do that? Well, you go into, you use your mind, you use your intellect to, as they say, define, to distinguish, to understand purposes and motivations. Okay, so let's see. In order to do that, I got to share. I got to share something here. Let's see if I can get this. I want to play something from. Let's see if this will work. Do you remember Monty Python? This is a key aspect of.
Don't do it. I think I know what you're going to do. Don't do it. You're going to have me thinking about this all day.
This is
so prepare. This is the warning.
This is how we need. Why we need to heal our brains, because we can fall into just being argumentative.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, no, Will Robinson. Danger.
I do admit it is dangerous, but it's worth it. There's a skit where a guy goes to a store or a clinic and he wants to buy an argument. Do you remember that one?
I think so.
He wants to buy an argument because he likes arguing and he hasn't had a good argument for a while. So he goes to the store and I would like to buy an argument. And the secretary says, would you like the 5-minute argument or the whole 30-minute argument? He says, well, I'll just buy the 5-minute argument. Yes. And say, okay. And here, go to room 3 and you can get your argument. Yeah. So he goes to room 3. And what we don't hear in this clip is he says, is this room 3? That's how we start. Let's see if I can get this, if this will. Will it
work? Technology.
I think I have to. Okay, I think
it's coming.
I need to shut off the one.
No, not the one.
Dear Lord. Yeah, you can't shut off the one, but I have to bring up the two.
This is technology. This is technology at work.
When? Just now. Yes, I did.
Okay, here we go. Here it goes. Here it goes.
I've told you once.
Is this room 3?
When? Just now.
Negative.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, sorry. Is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5-minute one.
Fine. Thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this is an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is not.
It is. You just contradicted me.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did.
No.
You did just
no,
then.
No, nonsense.
Oh, look, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. You came here for an argument.
Well, an argument's not the same as contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument's a connected series of statements to establish a definite proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It isn't just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
But it isn't just saying no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Argument's an intellectual process. Contradiction is just the automatic gainsaying of anything the other person says.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Not at all.
No, look.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's awesome.
I've had
arguments like that.
I had to play that one because it leads to what we need philosophy for. And my favorite line in there is when the guy tries to explain what an argument is. It's a collective series of statements to propose a position. No, it isn't. You're just contradicting me. And that's what's very popular. The new form of freeing your mind is you can just contradict. You can answer an argument by just saying no. That's why. It's of course Monty Python is lampooning our English, the English way of arguing, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. They're probably even lampooning the way the Parliament argues. Somebody states something, someone denies it. And so it's not a real good discussion.
Right.
Philosophy helps us to find a truth that you can both stand on. And if you can't find a truth that you could both stand on, then there's no peace.
Right.
Peace is the result of a common truth, where the modern mind says peace is a result of just toleration of another piece. Okay. Oh, Nick wants us to take a break. We have gone a little bit far in this beginning segment, and we will get back to it quickly. So hold on there, friends. We're going to we take a little break, but we're trying to see the healing power of good philosophy to heal our minds and apply it to our crazy world today, if nothing else. Stay tuned, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coyes with Tony here. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time. Streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kostka Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
During this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Because of the unprecedented COVID-19 virus pandemic, the Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's needs your immediate help. The Soup Kitchen is asking for your donations of water, juice boxes, individual food servings, hand sanitizers, and Lysol. The Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's is operating regular hours during this pandemic. The Soup Kitchen is operated by the Daughters of St. Mary Providence from the basement of St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, which serves over 21,000 meals per year. To offer your help, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That number again is 773-870-2435. Thank you.
Hey, hello, everyone. God bless you for being with us. Let's pray. Did you hear that the United States Catholic bishops have asked us all to pray to consecrate ourselves, our families, our nation to our Blessed Mother tomorrow, Friday. No, that's not tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Friday, May 1st.
Yeah.
There's one more. Today's
one
Wednesday.
Day.
Today's brain wrinkling Wednesday. So,
right.
On Friday, May 1st, we have to pray the rosary. The bishops are saying Eastern time, 3 o'clock, which would be 2 o'clock time here. But I'm a strong Midwesterner who has a little bit of a gripe against the Easterners who think that they can establish all things on the eastern coast. And so I would like to pray my rosary at 3 p.m. my time.
Yeah, that's what I like too.
So I'm going to pray my rosary 3 o'clock tomorrow, Friday, May 1st. It's the first Friday followed by the first Saturday. It's the feast of, it's beautiful because it's the feast of St. Joseph the Worker. Which was put into effect to counteract socialistic communism. Why? Because socialistic communism prided itself in working, the working man, the proletariat, the common man, the common mm-hmm. worker had to rise up against the established order, and therefore the workers' rights and everything else flew from that. And of course, we want workers to have rights. We praise and salute all workers of all kinds. But to take the Marxist-Leninist approach to that spells doomsday. Just look at history, friends. Just look at history. Without a strong good philosophy behind it, good theology, good philosophy leads to good theology. That's a very, very basic thing of Thomas Aquinas. Before the break, I was trying to expose some bad philosophy. And I mentioned Jean-Jacques Rousseau and his let's do away with everything traditional. And one of the things that was traditional was the family and marriage. So the state will take over, and that's why he can lead. It's why he fed the French Revolution, because the state will take over. And darn it, if I'm not feeling that in this coronavirus situation today, there is a strange spirit of communistic socialism.
Good point.
That is scary. I could say it that way. What the heck? Let me find this here. This was the, I think I can do this one. Before we get back to brain wrinkling or the healing power of good philosophy, in the context of what's going on with the coronavirus, this will be pulled from YouTube shortly.
Of course it will.
I'm absolutely sure. This is a nurse who's friends with other nurses, of course, and she's friends with a nurse in New York. You got to hear what she's saying. This sad, draconian, scary scenario. Let's see if I can get it here.
Those medications are not being used in hospitals in New York City. What is happening is that they're putting people on nasal cannula. If they require more than 6 liters of nasal cannula, they get intubated, they go on the vent, or they get trached if there's not enough vents.
Ventilators.
They don't get high flow, no non-rebreather, no non-invasive ventilation, no CPAP, no BiPAP. They're on a closed system, the ventilator, versus a CPAP or a BiPAP for fear that it will spread the virus. Which, by the way, I know a nurse in Florida who was fired for exposing that about CPAP and BiPAP and patients being put on the ventilator, like straight away to the ventilator, to be on a closed system. The patients don't know any better. They don't have family with them. There is no one there with them to advocate for them. So they are scared and they give consent. The ventilators have high PEEP, high pressure, which then causes barotrauma. It causes trauma to the lungs. Dr. Sedell, Cameron Kyle Sedell, a few weeks ago put out a video. He's in New York City, and he put out a video saying something is not right, like we're not treating this correctly. We're doing something wrong. This doesn't make sense. They pulled his video from YouTube and they took him out of ICU because they couldn't have one doctor going against the grain, going against their protocol. The protocol is propofol or some kind of sedation because they're on the ventilator and IV antibiotics. There's no hydroxychloroquine. They're not using that combination with Zithromax. They're not using zinc, vitamin C, high doses of vitamins A and D. They laugh. This is what she's told me. They laugh at that. She says, this is a nightmare. It's out of a horror movie, and I don't want to be a part of this. There are people who are a full code, and yet, if they crash, they're not doing compressions because it will spread the virus.
That's pumping
full
their
code,
chest.
Not doing compressions. Family is not there. They have no one to answer to. No one is being held accountable. A code was called and no one came. So sometimes they're not even resuscitating people. Again, left to rot and die. They're not given blood because we know that the blood is not oxygenated in these COVID patients. We know that. There are doctors all around the world sounding the alarms. These are the drugs that work. This is the pathophysiology of the disease. This is what's happening. And for some reason, it's not changing. Even though we know, some of us know what's going on, nothing is changing on the front lines. They stay in the same PPE, all shift, except for the top pair of gloves. So two pairs of gloves, or I don't know, maybe more than two, but they're only changing the gloves on the outside. Gown, mask, whatever else stays the same because all patients are COVID patients. So if it's a COVID floor, it's all COVID, but it's not because some of them are rule out COVID. So even if they're rule out COVID and they're not COVID, they're gonna get COVID because they're using the same PPE all shift and they're carrying that contamination to all of the patients. They're not changing their PPE.
Their protective gear.
They're not going into rooms. So they're running long tubing into the room so that they can manage the tubing from outside of the rooms. So if they're not going into the rooms, that means they're not assessing the patients. as frequently as you would be otherwise assessing your patients. They are not doing rapid result tests. You're lucky if you get results in 5 days. Okay, this is coming from my friend who is in New York City right now on assignment, who went there to help, and this is what she's finding. It's a horror movie, she says. Not because of the disease, but because of the way it's being handled. She said, we need help, and people are sitting there waiting in the hotels. Money, I guess, is being paid for by FEMA. And yet they're still understaffed. And there are hundreds of people, hundreds of nurses in the hotels waiting to be called onto a shift. So there is manpower enough if the goal were to actually save people. But resources are not being utilized properly or to full capacity in a way that maximizes the patient benefit or improves the outcomes. The records and charting are crap. And now some of these hospitals in New York City are probably crappy on a good day. So you add in the fear of COVID and the fear of the whole pandemic and forget it. So you're dealing, if you're in a crappy hospital with crappy nurses, let's face it, all of us nurses have worked with crappy nurses before who don't care. So now you add in this, forget it. And they're having people do things that they can't do. So maybe things that they're not proficient in. So maybe a nurse who's not familiar or comfortable with using a ventilator. And it's that figure it out mentality. Figure it out. These patients are critical and they're crashing. Figure it out. So nurses are being celebrated as heroes, right? We see how like the fire trucks and the police are like lining up and practically having these parades and celebrating them as heroes. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure in some parts of the country and other ICUs, I have friends that are working on the front lines in ICU and they are good nurses. And some of them are heroes, but we have nurses being celebrated as heroes who are killing people. They're not heroes. And they're being brainwashed to think they're doing something great just by going to work because they're brave enough to go to work. Well, what are you doing at work? You're certainly not saving people if you're not even running codes. You're not even going into patient rooms. You're a coward. You're hurting people. You're killing them. You're contributing to the problem. I know I'm going to get hate mail for this, and that's fine, because people are dying who don't have to die. Again, there's no family there, so no one's being held accountable. And once these people get intubated, they're being scared into giving consent to be intubated, and then for a lot of them, it's over. And there's nobody going to be held accountable. And there's nobody looking out for them. They are completely by themselves. There's like a total lack of critical thinking. It's out the window. And people are scared to speak up. And one person alone isn't going to change the overall culture of a hospital or a system or a city. Like I said, Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel's video was pulled from YouTube. And he was pulled from the ICU for sounding the alarm and going against the grain. So people are sounding the alarm. It's just not changing anything, apparently. So what can you do? Buck the system. I'm really fortunate I don't have any family in New York City that I personally have to worry about. If there are people that you are worried about, or maybe it's not even New York City, maybe you're in another city that's being really hard hit and you're just hearing really bad things coming out.
I'll stop it there. I felt that was a good thing to hear. It's another part of the trauma. It's another part of the rough part of this pandemic that we're not completely tied into, and it's sad what she's. I could just imagine that those hospital units are under such pressure, and people fold under pressure. They're not. But the CPAP. I hear commercials for those all the time. People that have trouble breathing, and actually, there's a product on that I hear commercials for about so sterilizing, cleaning your CPAP.
So clean.
Yeah, and so she says they're not using a CPAP, putting them on a ventilator that's a closed.
This is the things that.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
These are the things that, again, you know, and I know what they're doing on YouTube by trying to stop this. It seems that the truth, certain truths, want to be stopped. It's like you don't hear. And the whole thing, if I might add, with this whole, you know, pandemic, to me, it's fear. And now when you hear things like this, it's more than fear. It's like somebody is either ignorant to what they should be doing or, you know, when it comes to certain medicines, and yeah. I've heard the CPAP thing too works before you would put somebody on a ventilator. And again, I don't know all the facts and things like that, but when you hear, the one thing I am hearing, there's all these things that you could be doing, but people are choosing not to do them for some reason. And I don't understand that.
Yeah. Or use that malaria drug.
Exactly. It seems that when there's something is coming up that, okay, we can use it. Oh, no, you can't because of whatever. I know. If something is so that it's going to hurt somebody, and I know you don't have those trials, you don't know that right away, but at least try. You know, people are sitting back. If it's working, there's doctors, many doctors that are saying this works. There's even people that have said, hey, I've gone through this and it works. Why are you, you know— poo-pooing it in a sense.
Here's what I gotta say.
I don't get it.
Here's what I gotta say too, and it's hard. I don't like saying this, but it's just nagging at me. From two perspectives. One, a very religious perspective, and another from a very secular perspective. I could say, from a religious perspective, that the suffering and the dying can be part of God's punishment. I could sense that. I could feel it. People don't want to say that, but
people don't want to hear it either.
It's a sad thing to say, but I could see it being very true from a very religious perspective. So I'm looking at the suffering, and I pray to the Lord. Me and my loved ones and all I know don't get it. I pray daily for the protection of our Blessed Mother and my guardian angels, and those who may get it will recover. A lot of people do. They say it's the recovery level is at least 90%.
That's what they don't tell people. Me. People don't know that,
which is beautiful, you know. There's one perspective, and I could sort of tolerate it, not in the sense, I tolerate it in the sense that I get it, or I'll accept it. And so what do? I repent. I try to get other people to repent. I try to get other people to turn to God so that this punishment will be relieved. Mm-hmm. I do believe that God has the ability, the power. He's omniscient. He's all-knowing, and he's all-powerful, omnipotent. There's one perspective. Then what I sense, there's another perspective from a very secular side that wouldn't want to say any of that, wouldn't want to say God is involved in that at all.
Yeah.
But in some of these very secular-minded people, they're willing to deal with it. They're willing to accept it from a different angle. What's that different? They're willing to accept it because this might bring down the president.
Yeah.
And that is as important for many as it is for me from a religious perspective to say, let's turn back to God.
And I think about this too. And I've heard this, what you just said. I believe it to a certain degree also. But even if I was that person that says, oh, wow. You know, how can you bring that into something like this? Well, look at what some of these people are doing, the people that are supposed to be in charge. And I go right to the mayor. I'm sorry. I go to the governor. And I go to just the people in the House, in the Senate. They don't seem very concerned about us. They don't. When you look at it, you know, you're putting on a show, and it's great. But, I mean, keeping me at home, how does that really— And I'm trying to be obedient. This is something I've been going through too because, you know, and I'm getting at the point where enough is enough. What you're saying and what's happening is two different things. We've passed the curve. You know, there's no need for everybody to be at home. There's no need for everybody to not be able to go out in the sunny air or on the beach. I mean, social distance, sure. I think that's something that would help. But it's not, you can't force people to do that. It's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And that's a little word that, you know, nobody really tends to think about either. And I'm sorry to throw it out there, but I'm beginning to see this. Enough is enough.
Right. In that willingness. It's like it goes to the analogy of something that I kind of in my blood is that there is a kind of a civil war within our society. And obviously, if the war analogy is carried out, in a war, your side has, in some ways, has to be prepared to die on a hill, as it were. You see the stories of the Civil War, or any kind of war. Although today's modern war, we don't have people holding on to this hill. Right.
But the sad thing also is this shouldn't be about one side and the other. This should be about everybody coming together to get past this. And it seems like, and I'm sorry, there's one side that's wanting to do this and there's another side that is still keeping the fear. Now, again, I know, and there's a part of me too that says, who is the mayor? Who is the governor to tell me, to do this or that? When you yourselves aren't really doing that either.
Right. And especially those who are getting their paycheck without interruption.
That's another thing.
It's a lot easier to sit at home getting
a paycheck.
And tell
us what to do.
I really feel sorry for the workers who are, you know, depend on that weekly, monthly paycheck. And there's a tremendous amount of.
I think everybody at this point, especially our leaders, and I'm saying the church also, you should really sit down and think about what it is, not just for some people, but for everybody. We all need to do this together, or we don't. And, you know, it's a sad case when somebody like me, a common person, can say this, when my own leaders are not doing this.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't bring the clip, but maybe a lot of people have seen it. It's Dr. Erickson and Dr. Missy.
Yeah.
If you've seen that one, please check it out, my friends. This Dr. Erickson is an emergency room doctor who has spent 20 years specializing in immunology, pandemic type diseases. And he's saying, if we shelter in place, the longer we shelter in place, the weaker our immune system is getting.
That's what's starting to worry me.
And that's starting to worry. And he said, at the beginning, quarantine was the right move. He's not faulting the people for instituting that. There's so much unknown about this virus that it was the prudent thing to shut things down, as it were. But now we have getting to be almost 3 months of data. Months. And the primary points of the data are how many tests have been given, how many positive people, how many tests turned positive for the COVID virus, how many are negative, and how many die from it. And he's saying, look. He's saying, follow the science, my friends. Follow the science.
But which science? One people say one thing, and then there's all these other people saying, no, it's not. What model are you following where the numbers are wrong every time you do something?
Right. As a matter of fact, that brings us back to good old Thomas Aquinas and his philosophy that heals the mind. He divides science. He uses the word science, and the classical definition of the word science obviously comes from the Greek word knowledge, just the word ciencia, knowledge. And he says there's three kinds of ciencia. One is theoretical, where you're talking about ideas, sharing ideas, which is a very wonderful, important kind of thing. We need to share ideas. But he said that gives you insight into reality, especially in the sense if your idea in your mind corresponds with the form of things in reality, because the part of the power of the mind is to, he calls it, abstract something from the things in experience. And now we're talking about a thing that's very small, microscopic. You can't see the virus with your naked eye. But it's, it applies the same to a microscopic virus or to the moons of Jupiter, whatever. And so he says, your theoretical science is to be evaluated as good or bad insofar as it harmonizes with what he calls the form, the definition that is in the thing that this is a huge difference between the way Thomas Aquinas talks about gaining knowledge in his epistemology. he says that we abstract our definition, our form of things from the thing that really exists out there, where the modern mind says, no, we impose the definition on the molecules that are out there. The only thing that really exists, the only thing that is known to exist and to be true in the objective sense of the word, true for everybody at all times, are molecules. and then even that they'll debate because they'll say some molecules will come up with different, physicists, of course, will come up with different theories like that. So, but he says that we analyze those things and we abstract the form. And then there's practical science. And in that, he analyzes our actions, government actions and our own personal actions. One is politics, one is ethics, personal ethics. And the other is productive science, like the science of how to build things. And those are all good, important things, but they're distinct. And the problem with the naysayers, especially those doctors and scientists who are so against the malaria drug, mm-hmm. that hydroxychloroquine, I guess it's, yeah. it is known as, that there's the idea of it is this and this, and it doesn't make sense because it has, but the practical science of will we use it in this situation or not falls under politics and ethics and Thomas Aquinas's realm of things, and there's a big debate about it. So we need to heal our mind by appreciating the distinction between theoretical science and practical science and productive science. Let's take another break here before maybe we'll wind up with another salient, important Thomas Aquinas philosophical point. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're with Tony. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Because of the unprecedented COVID-19 virus pandemic, the Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's needs your immediate help. The Soup Kitchen is asking for your donations of water, juice boxes, individual food servings, hand sanitizers, and Lysol. The Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stan's is operating regular hours during this pandemic. The Soup Kitchen is operated by the Daughters of St. Mary Providence from the basement of St. Stanislaus Kloska Church, which serves over 21,000 meals per year. To offer your help, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That number again is 773-870-2435. Thank you. During this COVID-19 virus pandemic, offering you prayer and inspiration through your faith.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy with us at 3 p.m. Central Time, streamed live from St. Stanislaus Kloska Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Go to the St. Stanislaus Kloska Church Facebook page and pray with us daily at 3 p.m.
Have mercy on us and on the whole world.
Hey, that's a beautiful sung version of the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I think of Christina. Christina always sings it here, and I miss that.
Indeed. Keep remember, people, your rosary and your chaplet. Those are two powerful devotions that we need to promote. And so, okay, so with the time we have left here, I wanted to underscore something that this Dr. Erickson was saying that seems to make a lot of sense when he says that our immune systems are going to be severely weakened because of our shelter in place. It's hard to say it, but because he's saying so many people are testing positive for it. He says in California, he's from California, there's about 40 million people in California. So he says that from his tests, and he tested about 6,000 people and just in his little clinic, there's about a 12% positive rate, which would mean if you extrapolate it to the whole state, there'd be about 4.5 million people testing positive across the state. That's a lot. 4.5 million people testing positive, with the number of deaths being around, let's say, 2,000. I forget, 1,700 and something. Let's say 2,000. That's like a 0.03 or 0.04% chance of dying of it. And I don't want to get it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go through the sickness. But thank God a lot of people are coming through the sickness. Mm-hmm. Then they're then they're called the herd the herd curers.
Right, because everybody's developing antibodies.
You're getting it in a low dose. That's exactly what vaccines usually are. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a little low dose of it.
See, that's the thing I don't understand, because, again, it's probably – I don't think it's really important that everybody knows that they have it, because the people that do have it don't necessarily show signs. And if you're trying to stop it from spreading, that's close to impossible, because a virus spreads. That's what a virus does.
Yeah.
So, I mean – okay, so we've stayed at home for a month, 2 months now, whatever the case may be. But then it's still going to be there. It's still going to be out there. So I don't know what you're stopping at this point except for just destroying the economy.
Yeah. And well, it's connected to the adage, if we save just one life, it's worth it. You know, we have that in our repertoire of principles to live by.
That's good, but how many people die of so many different things during a year?
Yeah, and a Thomas Aquinas philosophical principle that relates to that is the distinction between direct and indirect killing. Mm. Thomas Aquinas makes an important distinction between you may be indirectly involved in a killing, but you're not culpable for it.
Right.
Besides being directly involved, you know, a classic example would be, okay, are you the doctor that performs the abortion, or are you the uncle who or aunt who drives a girl to the abortion clinic? Yeah. In that case, because you're dealing with a severe mortal sin, let's say, you know, you're not supposed to be indirectly involved either. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch of indirect involvement that all of us do that mitigate our culpability in a mega way. Mm-hmm. I think of the example of, you know, we hear so often that different companies are supporters of Planned Parenthood or abortion practices, and we often call for boycotting, mm-hmm. you know. And I do try to not shop at places that I know are involved in that. But every now and then I find myself right. going to a place
In a sense, you can't help it because you need that service, but you would hope that you didn't partake in that. But
yeah, and so that's am I indirectly involved in killing children because I shopped at Target, or how many different ones they are? And so we could try the best we can, especially when there's options, you know. Especially when there's options, but when there's no options, you're kind of forced in a certain sense. And so the theory behind if it saves one person's lives, it's worth it. What's the it involved in that?
Right.
That's the crucial thing. What seems like the radical stay-at-homers would define the it as the destruction of a lot of people's livelihoods. If the shutdown continues and forces so many people out of business, so many people go to bankrupt, so many people maybe to, I hate to say it, but commit suicide. Some people are committing suicide.
That's what I started thinking about too, and it's happening. I mean, that's going to start happening.
Yeah, and you don't want those things to happen by staying at home.
You really can't help them, but again, everything adds up in a sense.
That's where this distinction between direct and indirect should come into play in our action or our decisions. Because you could say, okay, if we open up somewhat with with masks, with social distancing, you know, we can handle that for a spell. Even though Dr. Erickson would say, don't even worry about the masks.
And see, that's what it is. You have people saying not to worry about masks. Then you have people saying worry about masks.
Yeah.
And then there's common sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's a lot of everybody knows something different.
Yeah. I might err in the side of wearing a mask because I'm over 60.
Exactly. I would think
if I was 25, I might not wear a mask.
But see, that's the thing too. And it bothers me too when you say, you know, think about the children. And yeah, you go around and you see abortion and you hear about all this other stuff. But then, even at you know, to keep it to what's going on now, there's, keep, you know, the people with the symptom or that have, you know, like a diabetes and things like that, or the older people, take care of them first. But no, you know, look what they did in New York. So it's, I mean, come on.
Yeah. We have to accept the difficult rule of life that there is no absolute safe life. If you're looking for no risk, which is kind of a variation on the other principle we have, is zero tolerance, right?
Yeah.
Zero tolerance has become a new term in our modern society. And it's always been a strange, it's what happens when the virtue of prudence, another one of Thomas Aquinas's great philosophical rational principles, prudence, where you assess and you go from the theoretical truths that you have, many which may be fighting against each other, but and then you live it out practically in your theories of ethics and politics. So what blows my mind too is one of the ways that I, as a priest, trying to tell people not to use artificial contraception is to say, well, you know, there's a risk of getting cancer, or there's a risk of, we just accept that risk. But now we're not willing to accept any risk.
Nope.
I think our hour has come to the end. Our hour is finishing. God bless you for tuning in to the Winds of Change. I hope this brain wrinkling didn't hurt too much. It's good for you. Tune in every weekday at noon, 7:50 a.m. I am Father Tom Coise. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed?
each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.